Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. I'm David Hartman. Thank you. Oh, gosh. Thank you very much. And please welcome our two guests, John O'Connor, the Bearcat guy, his colleague, John Musgrave, over here, and flying number two for the Blue Angels, Lieutenant Damon Cruz.
Where would you like to sit, John?
Hey, Damon,
right there, sir.
Why don't you sit there? Oh, it doesn't matter. So, welcome, gents.
Oh, it is outstanding to be here. Thank you.
Now, you know, you have a pretty busy time during your life. So what's it like for you to see all of this? Have you been here before?
David, no, this is my first time in Oshkosh, and I can honestly say I've been waiting to come here my entire life. And since a kid, sports or school, and I'd go to the military, different exercises or deployments got in the way. But I'm happy to say coming in here and flying in here yesterday and landing, looking left, running down the runway, and everyone's waving, huge crowd. I had chills going up my spine that entire landing rollout. So thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, cool. Welcome to Oshkosh. So, John, Bearcat man, talk about this airplane.
Well, first I'd like to
Where'd you get it?
I got it out of Galveston Air Museum. I went and saw it there, and I fell in love with it. And I asked if it was for sale, and I found out about the history of it. This aircraft was made 3 years or 3 months after my birthday. It was November of 48 when it was manufactured, and it flew until 53 when an ensign brought it into Corpus Christi, made a bad landing, went up on a nose, and it went into storage after being restored. It was flown one ferry flight and went into storage. Long serendipity, and the guys from Galveston started restored. About 2000 they got it restored. And a Navy aviator, Tom Gregory, they call him Gumby. He took it up on three.
Was that his call sign?
That's yeah.
Gumby?
Gumby's an unusual name.
Wonder where that comes from. We wonder where all call signs come from.
He was with a bunch of nurses. Can you believe this? He was out in Galveston Bay, and they were water skiing. And somehow, the prop hit him. And he was cut up so badly, they thought he wouldn't live. But there were all the nurses on board. They kept him alive. 1 year later, he went back flying for the Navy. That's why they call him Gumby. They couldn't get him down. They put him back together, and he went back as a Navy aviator. So this plane kind of did him in a little bit. He took it up on a first flight, and the hydraulic system blinded him. It blew a line. Second flight, landing gear wouldn't come down. Third flight, the engine had problems. So the museum decided it's a beautiful plane. We're going to ground it, and it's going to be static. Well, they kept it airworthy. And then there was a hurricane coming through there, and they decided to fly it out. And sure enough, Gumby had to fly it out. They flew it out, flew it back, and they said, geez, it flies. So they kept it kind of in fairly good condition. And then this Yankee from Chicago decided he had enough of a Corsair and a Mustang.
Was that what
that
you were
me.
Flying before?
Yep. And
so you had a Mustang and a Corsair?
American Beauty and Kathleen. In fact, a beautiful airplane, Kathleen, FG-1D, which is, I think, the best flying Corsair. Probably wasn't the best for fighting a war, but boy, I tell you what, it could turn and bank and do everything a little bit better because it was so light. It had a lot of fabric. I mean, all the planes have fabric. Even this Bearcat has fabric.
Where's the fabric?
Can we get up?
We'll do it at the end.
It's on. Look at, you can see it right there. You can see it all over the ailerons, and you can see it in the elevator. You know,
later on, by the way, after we finish our conversation, welcome. He'll be here to walk around the airplane and answer any questions you have about all the technology of the airplane. Yeah. If you already have a Corsair and a Mustang, why buy a Bearcat or any other airplane? I mean, if you already got a Corsair.
Because everybody told me, you know, we all have heroes, right? And you hear things from guys you really admire, and they tell you that was the ultimate propeller plane. And so you go, wow. And nobody just lets you get in one of these, right? So I thought, well, here's an opportunity. And I bought it. I put it together. I started flying it. And that's, you know.
You bought it and put it together, so you restored this?
Well, I had a little bit of help from a very famous restorer, Nelson Ezel, down in Breckenridge, Texas. So
right. But you restored the airplane.
I paid the check.
Yeah, right. But yeah. You had it restored.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Did you fly military before?
No, I tried to be in the military. I grew up south side of Chicago and saw all the planes at Midway Airport going in, and I grew up loving all these old movies and all the command movies, watching the T-6 and training films and everything. And so I bought a T-6 first to learn how to fly a nice tailwheel airplane.
So that the T-6 was your first.
My first was a Mentor T-34.
Right.
And I did that for about 450 hours, and that was great fun, a great plane. But then everybody kept telling me, you got to get rid of that nose wheel. So I got rid of the nose wheel, and I bought myself a T-6, which I still own. I've had that forever, and if I didn't have that to fly 40 to 100 hours a year, I couldn't fly these because it keeps you honest. It doesn't want to fly straight. It was a pilot trainer. It taught you to use your feet, move your feet, and move your feet until it goes back in the chocks. Never give up. Where this plane here could almost make you fall asleep.
Really?
The difference between these aircraft is phenomenal. My Corsair had 7 degrees of trim, 6 degrees of aileron, or it wanted to take off on me. The Mustang was a little bit better, and that was 5 degrees of rudder trim, or you were putting in 150 pounds on your right foot to keep it from going off in the weeds. The Bearcat, none of the bad habits. It's an elevator. You sit there, no trim, cob to power. You could jam the power if you wanted to, which isn't good for an engine, but it would just go straight up. Within 250 feet, you'd be off the ground. But you really want to have 130 octane fuel, which I don't know if people sell anymore, very common. So we always restrict our manifold pressure, and we don't do that.
So what's the difference between the Bearcat and the earlier planes you talked about, the Mustang and the Corsair, in terms of that torque that forces you to use your legs? What did they do with a Bearcat that was different?
You know, I don't have that kind of degree and background, but they did the right thing to the tail. Like, this tail is different than the plane that Butch Forrest flew, the first Blue Angel. That was a Series 1, shorter tail. They kept improving how they set up the engine and the tail, and somehow, throughout all the power ranges, it would just be neutral. Wow. Now, how they set up that kind of harmonics and torque and how they did that distribution, I don't know. All I know is that I benefit from that every time I get in the plane.
So talk about Butch O'Hare.
Butch is an interesting man. He, much like me, he made model airplanes, and I made them out of balsa wood too, and then we went to plastic. He probably didn't have plastic back then, but I made balsa wood planes, and that's what he did. And when he got to be a 22-year-old man, a young man, he's going to junior college, and the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and he decided he's got to go and enlist. So he went and enlisted and started his career. They put him on the Hornet for his first tour of duty.
Fleet tour, yeah.
Yeah, fleet tour of duty. Got on the Hornet, and he gets into Hellcat, and he's over Guadalcanal, and he's doing pretty good. He shoots down a Japanese Zero, but he didn't see the guy sneaking up on him, and he gets all shot up. He comes back limping, all shot up, plane shot up, dead sticks it in Guadalcanal, saves himself, saves the plane. He gets patched up, and they put him on the Enterprise. Who does he see there? A Butch O'Hare, another Butch. And we all know the story about O'Hare at O'Hare Airport, and how he was quite the hero as a young ensign on his first flight. Very first flight in a Wildcat, he went and single-handedly knocked down a couple of Japanese Zero and a bomber that might have very well intercepted the ship. That's how he starts his career, right? Well, now here you got Redford, Admiral Redford, and you got Butch O'Hare, and they said, hey, how about you join the flight into midnight, the flight into darkness? And, you know, Butch just says, okay. So they would go out, pitch dark, and seek the enemy.
At night?
With dead reckoning, and go and shoot down. He shot down a zero, and dead reckoned back on fumes on one of the flights. Can you imagine being over the water and dead reckoning back and hoping you're going to find, you know, a ship? I mean, that's guts. That's
Damon, you're smiling. How does that how does that sound to you after flying at the trapping at night in a Hornet?
It sounds terrifying. well, the differences couldn't be greater, but it makes us more appreciative of the systems and technology we have today. But it's a tribute to the skill and the courage of everyone that came before us, for sure.
He talked about balsa wood planes and rubber bands and, you know, Billy. Did you do any of that when you were a kid?
I did. I built plastic models. my grandfather was a naval aviator, actually flew this plane once. I started building airplane models with him, going to air shows, and got me into reading it all about, really about the history of aviation, specifically naval aviation. And truly honest, that's what inspired me to pursue a service career in the Navy and serving my country. But